ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home 1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
All right, welcome to our Q&A. Monday morning, we're doing it. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us. I'm Tony Bruschi. I'm here. We're going to be talking about a couple different cases today. We're going to start with David, and your questions, please drop them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube and Facebook, and we're going to try and get to them as we go through here. It's impossible to look at the tragic fate of 13-year-old Celeste Rivas Hernandez without feeling a profound, sickening sense of systematic and familial failure. A highly vulnerable girl cried out for help through three separate disappearances in a single year. Yet, she was met with absolute silence from the adults tasked with protecting her. Now that her remains have been discovered in an impounded Tesla and a 21-year-old pop star is in handcuffs, the entire world is finally starting to pay attention. So how does a child scream so loudly in plain sight, only to be completely ignored until she becomes a horrific true crime spectacle? That's what we are getting into today. David has a, within 24 to 48 hours of the arrest, there's going to be something going on here. He's either going to be charged today or he's going to be let loose. Very likely charges are going to be coming down. So by the time you're watching or reading this, the charges may have already been made. We're going to assume that they have and discuss the case and your questions. Let's start with our first one. It says, I'm looking at my own kids on their phones and I'm terrified. She was allegedly groomed on Discord back in 2022, right in her own house. How do we even spot this before they walk out the door? And I get it. That's a tough question, especially for parents that have kids that age. I have a daughter exactly that age. And it's a weird one. Because they are on their devices. They are doing this. It's not as easy as it used to be where you had like the family computer and you could kind of keep an eye on what they're getting into. They got their own devices. They got this, they got that. They got their own accounts. What do you do? How do you keep track of that stuff? Robin, what's your thoughts on where this case is sitting and our first question there?
Yeah, so I'll go with the first question first because this is the one that all of us face every single day with our kids. And it's constantly evolving, but we can keep it really simple. And years ago, I was a board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation. And so we face this every day as we're out there trying to uncover nefarious individuals trying to groom our children into doing things that are definitely not in their best interests. And so as with whether it's true crime, recruiting spies, or all those skill sets I learned in all these different areas of my life gave me the skill set to be the number one thing that's most important to me and you too, Tony, and as well as everyone in our audience, that is being a parent. Because the number one thing you always want to think of is, what am I doing that's going to help or hinder a healthy dialogue and relationship with our children? Because that's the first thing we need to do. We need to have that healthy relationship. So here you are sitting at home. You're thinking, oh my God, this Celeste thing is horrendous. David, is this whole thing is horrendous. How do I prevent it? Communication, communication, communication. And then you got to think of, what can you do to inspire your kids to want to dialogue with you? Here's the toughest thing ever. You can't judge what's coming out of their mouths. You can't judge the friends. You cannot impose what you think is right or wrong on them yet. You have to discover it. You have to inspire them to want to share it so you can actually work the problem together. That's all life is all about. How do you work these challenges and problems together? Now, you'll have resistance, you'll have all these things, but the most important thing always is to be curious, watch for, and here's the major tell always, watch for behavior pattern changes, because the number one thing that groomers do is isolate their prey. They want to get them isolated. Just look at all the cults we cover. What mm-hmm. do all these cults do? They isolate, they control, they shame. They use power over them. And so if you notice a wobble in your children's lives with their communication with you or others or anyone else, that's where you don't overreact. Don't go, oh my God, freak out and judge. And because all you're going to do is isolate them more. They're going to feel more ashamed. You know, you inspire them to share by having them. I remember I had an acronym I used, and one of the first one is in it was T, teach. Have your kids teach you what they're doing. Have them show you and educate you on how they're doing, what they're doing, and most importantly, who's in their lives. The rule in our house, when my kids are in their late 20s now, but even younger, I remember when they were on these gaming platforms, my wife didn't want them to be able to communicate with anyone. You can't talk to anyone online. I'm like, unrealistic, because either you can be part of it and aware of it, or you can outlaw it and they're just going to hide it from you. Yeah. And so the big rule in our house was educate me on who you're talking to so we can have a dialogue and discussion. And so that every time you got off your game or at the end of the day, tell me who you played with. I want to hear about them. I want to hear, you know, if that's what you allow in your house. And so I was always about the number one thing always was transparency, transparency, transparency. Don't judge it, because that way, if you're not judging it, you can shift it by asking questions. Hey, how is this individual helping you or hindering you with what you want to achieve? How are these behaviors healthy or unhealthy in your lives? Are they doing this? Are they doing this? And so allowing people, including your own kids, to discover choices and consequences for choices hand in hand with you to keep them safe through that communication. Granted, who knows right or wrong. I'm just telling you that's what we did in our house, and that's what I'm always looking for. I'm looking for wobbles and behaviors, and we just address them like this.
Well, I think the reality is so many parents are parenting in a way that mimics how they were raised. I mean, it's how I was raised. And we look back and go, I wonder why that didn't work out so well, because a lot of it involved isolation, control, and shame.
Yes.
To control. And if you truly want to help that person become an individual that can navigate the world, isolating them, controlling them, and shaming them are not the correct routes. It's inspiring them to do good, to make the right choices. It's not shaming, but that is for so many of us that's so, it's like it's foreign. It breaks the mold of how we thought that this is how you raise children. It's not. I mean, it's not you're not going to get the results you're looking for if that's the way you're doing it. Because guess what? You know what also is happening out there? The predators are using the exact same pattern, the isolation, the control, and the shame.
100%.
It's funny that we end up doing that in our own homes sometimes to prevent people, or in our nearsightedness. Yeah. We think we're protecting our children from predators by doing the exact same shit that they're doing to isolate, control, and shame, and then keep that person over here on the other side. And guess what? It feels familiar to the kids. It feels like home in a certain way.
Yeah.
When someone kind of sneaks in and kind of has the same sort of MO and the same sort of way of handling their emotions and their feelings. Well, dad handles things like that. Mom handles things like that. This person must have my best interest at heart too. But at the end of the day, it never does anything for the actual autonomy of the person to teach them how to deal with the world. I mean, we're looking at it right now quite a bit in the Duggar household. The isolation there, the control, the shame of just mm-hmm. having emotions in life. And look at those people. They're not remotely prepared for the real world. And the ones that are spinning out of control seem to be completely clueless that they're even spinning out of control. I completely agree. It is something, and I think one of the most powerful things that you've ever said to me, that you've said on the air, is just the words inspire them, because that's the lever that needs to be pulled every time. If you're trying to get something, if you're trying to get somebody, or you're trying to to look out for someone's best interest, not just get them to do what you want them to do, but to get them to do what's going to be best for them. In your own view, especially if you're a parent, you're looking out for your kids. You want to inspire them to get there. You can't push them there. You can't shame them there. You're not going to control them there. You're not going to isolate them there. Inspire them. And that's what's key. And if you don't have the tools, you can end up in a frunk, basically.
Yeah. And you know, the bottom line for everything we ever did in my house and still do is always asking that question. Is what you're about to do or say going to help or hinder a healthy relationship with a healthy dialogue? Internal, external, absolutely everything. Because all problems in life are interpersonal problems. All problems in life are relationship problems. And probably the one thing I'm really, really good at, maybe two or three, if I'm lucky, but is I don't, and again, we've talked about this on the show. When I hear crazy shit,
yeah,
I don't freak out. I don't react. I get curious. And so me never reacting in a way that would create walls to go up or a feeling of shame or embarrassment, my kids are never embarrassed to share anything with me. They just share because they know I'm not going to overreact. And if it's a challenge, you don't even hear me say the word problem. If it's a challenge, what better resource it is than work it together? I love working challenges because our household has the philosophy of it's a great rep. As challenging as a situation is with crazy relationships, with unhealthy, toxic people. I mean, my son and I were just talking about today coming back from a camping trip. Some of the crazy situations and people he's dealt with in life. And all we said was, that was a great rep. What do we learn? We were doing after actions on it all day this morning on a drive back from a camping trip. We are just working, constantly reworking. What do we learn? What could be different next time? Not that we would change. We both say this all the times too. All the experiences we have in life makes us who we are. So there's no regrets over choices. But we could probably handle each situation a bit better. How we communicated, how we're being transparent, how we focus on the healthiness versus the unhealthiness. And so as you're facing this, kind of getting back again to the theme of this question, what can we do for our own kids? Inspire them, like you said, unlock it from within them to want to share their lives with you by not shaming them from the choices they're making at a young age.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a big thing too. With there's probably a lot of parents listening right now going, I don't know that I've been doing that. You can change. Start now. Don't dig in and be like, well, it's not how I've been doing. Like, change. Just you can do better. Everybody can do better. We can always do better. I hope the day I die, I'm like, well, if I had a few more days, I think I might do things a little bit better this way. Because it's always a journey. It's always learning and going from the reps that you have and trying to make better decisions as you progress. There's never just the one answer to everything.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. I want to make sure, because I know we're about to move on. Here's one thing you can do. So here's a typical situation. You hear your kids say something to you. Our typical response is, don't do that. You shouldn't do it that way. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do this. So anything where you hear them say or do something and you're going to have that, shift it. You can stay on the same time and say, instead of saying you should do it this way, say, hey, what was the outcome you were seeking? What were you hoping to achieve? What were you hoping to do? So in other words, ask a what question with what, you know, in other words, start to help them gauge and think out the consequence of actions. It's like, what were the outcome you were seeking? Was that helping and hindering where you're going? If they're doing something at school or they're doing something with the friends and they said, well, so-and-so said something to me, I say, all right, what do you think the outcome of their actions they were seeking was? Do you think that was against you or for themselves? I mean, so you just keep asking questions non-judgmentally. So it gets their gears in their brain working a little bit more, thinking, playing these things out, doing the thought experiments together with them.
Because it's like it's obvious things, but it's like it's not so obvious all the time. When you're a parent, you take a step back and go, okay, yeah, I could definitely use a refresher on this. I could use some inspiration on this. So I think it's very important to say these things out loud, because I don't think a lot of times it's done. Let's go to another question on this specific case. This is from Mark via Patreon. And if you want to join our Patreon, the link is in the description. Do you think David Burke, and this is assuming that he's part of this, so let's just play that, obviously innocent until proven guilty. Yep. Do you think David Burke targeted her specifically because her home life life was such a mess? Like, did he see a psychological vacancy and just swoop in to play the savior so she'd willingly leave? It's kind of a loaded question because it almost... It's insinuating predatory behavior. I don't know if it's insinuating that he, you know, targeted her to kill her. I don't think anybody targeted anybody to kill anybody here, quite
right,
honestly.
I agree. But
I guess let's go back to the makeup of the relationship, because obviously there's video of the two of them sitting in front of the screen chatting at one point. Mm-hmm. So did he target her to have that relationship? We don't know the lines of the relationship. Were they just friends? Was it something more? We don't know. So did he target her because she was vulnerable, because her home life was more than a hot mess? What's your thoughts? Again, he was 19 at the time. She was 12, 13, around there. That's the age gap. Is this a predatory someone targeting at this point? I go ahead.
Yeah, target is an interesting word, isn't it? I think it was a relationship of opportunity that I think fit both of them where they were at, and they were playing into it because his behaviors are very predatory. I think, again, from what we see and observe from the outside in, who knows? But I really think, because when you look at his background, very religious family, religious background and upbringing, you have very controlled environment. And typically we've been seeing this, we have our own confirmation biases going on right now because we've covered so many cults recently. A lot of times when you come up in such a controlled environment, one thing you're trying to do is exercise your own control. And that's what we kind of see in this situation, where he's exercising potentially some control. And I wouldn't call it targeted, but he saw an opportunity in someone who was looking to make a connection with someone because of something missing in her life, because of lack of healthy relationships in another area of her life. And here he is of a... probably, you know, saying some very good things, some very nice mm-hmm. things, giving her validation. So he was doing the grooming behaviors that predators will do when they're targeting someone for horrendous things. Do I necessarily think that was he was like thinking to himself, oh, I got a target of opportunity, I'm going to get her? No, I don't think it was like that. I think it was literally she came into his sphere of influence mm-hmm. that he could see, and he had needs, he had control issues, whatever it was that she kind of fit together like this with that. So I think it was that combined with two brains that are under 24 years old doing stupid, emotionally yeah. impulsive, emotionally needy, both of them filling gaps and needs that were not fulfilled with healthy, stronger relationships in their closer immediate circle. And it just wound up in disaster.
And I have a lot of questions because, like, something inspired her to think that life is better hanging out, you know, allegedly with the David. As, you know, she was lying about her age, allegedly, from many people saying that she was 19 years old. We don't know if David knew her actual age. For all we know, she could have been lying to him the whole time. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to make any sort of excuse for him. I'm just trying to look at what cards did the people have in their hands when they were playing them? And what did they believe they had while they were playing them? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think anybody, you know, really does, unless we can find some sort of proof that he knew her actual age. Either way, you got, again, not a lot of life reps here in terms of David either. Mm-hmm. So having a friend who's, you know, we now know is 13 at the time. If she's cool. saying she's 19, she's coming from an unhappy family life, which a lot of people do. And predators do tend to prey on that. I just don't know if he was preying on that, or if it was he thought he was interacting with another teenager that was coming from an unhappy home, and they became buddies and they became friends, and something horrible happened and they had to cover up a crime of her being dead. I don't know. And I'm not saying that is exactly what happened. I have no clue, but there's a lot of weird caveats in this case as far as who knew what and when. And I think that's what is going to come down to when this gets to court, as far as any sort of accountability for life and death and what happened to Celeste yeah. Rivas Hernandez. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. But I think, it comes down to a lot of lack of life experience here and how to handle the unexpected.
I think, yes. And, you know, and definitely to the point of one of our listeners, just, you know, it doesn't matter in the eyes of the law. Absolutely, it doesn't, because these are still choices.
Yeah.
What all these people involved really didn't have, kind of going back to our first question that we were talking about, no one had a great, healthy, mature relationship that was a loving critic saying, because, again, I know we talked with Coffin Deffer again on Friday about this, you know, and I know your feelings on this too. I don't think this was a intentional murder for whoever did it. This screams of, oops, tragedy had been because we were really stupid and we're morons. And typically when really stupid morons do stupid things, the first thing you should do is let someone who isn't stupid weigh in. It's like, hey, we should call the cops. We should let, you know, we should, when something dumb happens, rational minds, sound minds say we need to bring transparency to this as fast as possible because horrendous mistakes happen from time to time. In order to move through this, we have to have transparency, open, honest communication, and move through it to work the problem that we just created for ourselves and this tragedy that we just created for ourselves and in our family and other families. But my conjecture on this one is that you had a lot of underdeveloped brains doing stupid and doubling down on stupid, making it worse and worse and worse until you wind up with a horrendously decomposed body of her in a Tesla. I mean, how stupid is that? That just rings about the age maturity level of the individuals involved in this.
It really does. It's going to be fascinating as this starts to play through the court system, if it starts playing through the court system. Like I said, as of this recording, he has a court date today. We don't know if he has a court date today. We are expecting charges today is officially what we're looking at. We'll let you know what happens there. We're recording this assuming that they're going to drop. But all of this is relevant based on where we're sitting right now. Again, curious to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to update this and give you more insight as this all progresses. I know a little bit later in the week, Bob Mott is going to be on with us. And we're going to be discussing kind of the legal end of where this is all sitting. Again, assuming that charges are imminent or have already come down by the time you're watching this. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
For a year, the country has been told one version of this story here. The Celeste Rivas Hernandez gone missing, found gone and deceased in a trunk. Music star, David somehow connected to it, all of that. 13-year-old girl named Celeste Rivas Hernandez runs from her home in Lake Elsinore, California, in April of 2024. She vanishes into the orbit of the rising alt-pop star named David, D4VD, a year and a half later, her remains are found in the front trunk of his abandoned Tesla at a Hollywood tow yard. That is the shape of the story on every magazine cover, every podcast, every viral edit on TikTok. Missing girl, famous suspect, tragic end. Right? There's one problem with that story. Celeste was actually not missing for most of it. She was at her cousin's high school graduation, allegedly, in May of 2024. She was on surveillance video, fighting with neighbors in her own backyard in September of 2024. She was, according to a family friend who had known her since kindergarten, back at her mother's house at least twice during the year before her body was found. Once she came by herself, once she was brought back by police, she was, by every available piece of evidence, coming and going. Which means the central question of this case is not who took her. The central question is who was supposed to be keeping her home, watching her, parenting her, and why they couldn't. Here's a fast context for anyone just catching up. And I want to say this. I am not blaming her parents for her death. But that, I'm sorry, is a large missing piece to this whole equation. She's missing. No, she wasn't. She really wasn't. They just never said they found her, is the way it appears to be. So why is she on such a loose leash? She's a child. She doesn't have autonomy to go wander around her city or the country at her own will. She's a effing child. So before he was like, well, she's got rights. She's a child. You know who has rights? You know who actually has not rights? Responsibilities? Parents. Parents that are supposed to be taking care of their child. They have responsibilities. And you know what? You lose rights when you don't take care of your responsibilities. And I think that might be an area that should be looked at here. Because when this is going on, and yes, children run away, and it's horrible, and it's tragic, and all of that. But I'm sorry. She wasn't just gone into the ether for like a year with the pop star. She was coming and going. Where was the parenting? Well, they were immigrants. Well, they were working. Well, I don't effing care. I don't care where you're from. I don't care where you're going. I don't care about any of it. You're a parent. You have a child. None of the rest matters. The rest is noise. You figure that shit out. Well, it's really hard, Tony. You know what it's like being a single parent? The F I don't. I am one. I've been one. For a long time, with no help. It's me. I get it. Well, it's you struggle. Yeah, been there too. Been there too. It's been a long road getting to where I've gotten to. And at the end of the day, there's excuses, there's this, there's that. Two things, parent, child. You can't parent, you shouldn't have the child. Unfortunately, that's the lesson that, you know, I think probably 70 to 80% of American parents find themselves in, of like, oh, you know, it's not optional. I'm sorry, for those of us parents who do parent, it's not an optional thing. Believe it or not, it's not. As much as some people like to make it that way, or think it is, or have excuses for it because of this, because of that. Again, I don't effing care. I've heard so many excuses around this story as we skirt around this piece of it. I'm sure she was probably a hellion to deal with. It seems kind of like it. Guess what, Mom and Dad? Hard to be a parent. You don't know what you're going to get. There's no manual, and they're all different. But it's yours now. She's been yours for 13 years. And, you know, figure it out. Figure it out. Sorry, that's my little soapbox rant as a parent looking at this story going, where the hell's Mom and Dad? I'm sick of the excuses on this story. I just am. Because when it comes down to it, like I said, there is no excuse when it comes to the life and death of your child. Well, she's got a boyfriend. He's old. Like, then why? She's a child. Again, you have responsibilities. Yes, no, you can do this. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do this. You're not leaving the house. There will be consequences if you do. I know it's not that easy. I get it. But this, I don't know. This feels like, and I don't know. I have no idea. Hands thrown up in the air. I don't know. It was an utter failure on their part. Utter failure of parenting. Period. Maybe that's mean. Maybe that's cruel. Maybe they the end result is the same. If that area, if that mode of her life had been stable, had safety, had a reason for her not to run away, she'd probably still be alive. So I think one of the greater questions is, why was she running away? Kids do it. Yeah, there's usually a motive, a reason. And I don't know what that motive is or that reason. But again, I'm thinking it's something that should be looked at, considering there's still children over there. Call me crazy. Here's the fast context for anyone that's catching up. David Anthony Burke, known professionally as David, D4VD, was arrested on April 16th of 2026 on suspicion of murder in the death of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. He's being held without bail. His attorneys have publicly denied any involvement, stating that the evidence will show he did not do any of this, so that he did not murder her. He was not the cause of her death. That's a statement from the attorneys. He's not been, at least as of this recording, has not been indicted, and no criminal complaint has been filed. By the time you're watching this, that might be changed. Either way, he's presumed innocent under the law, and I'm not giving him a free pass at all in any of this. Law enforcement sources have also indicated that more than one person may have been involved in her death and the disposal of her body, and additional arrests remain possible. That is the case everyone is covering. That is the story heading to a courtroom. This one here that we're about to get into further is different. This one is about the year before the Tesla, because that is where the story actually lives, and almost nobody is telling it. So your thoughts in the comments as we go through this, Substack and YouTube. The links are there in the description. Consider what the public recording already shows, or the public record already shows, I should say. 3 missing person reports in 14 months, 11 sheriff's department visits to the Rivas Hernandez family home, a 7th grader who was not enrolled in any school for roughly a year, an ex-boyfriend on the record saying she was telling friends she wanted out, a next-door neighbor of almost 3 years who has never met the family. That is the portrait of the David story, quietly existing in the ether, that the David part of the story is quietly covering up, not intentionally, just because it doesn't get noise, because people don't want to lift up that fiber of this mattress and go, ooh, what's under here? It's harder, it's sadder, and it's slower than the famous suspect and the gruesome crime scene, but it's a big part of this story. Let's start with the sheriff's calls. Between February 24 and April 25, Riverside County Sheriff's deputies were called to Celeste's home 11 times. Most were logged as minor crime investigation. At least one was logged as suspicious circumstances. 4 produced official reports. 3 got follow-ups. On March 19th and 24 alone, deputies came 3 times in a single day. That was the same day Celeste was caught on a local liquor store's surveillance camera, running down her own street at 7 in the morning without her belongings. The same day her sister walked into that same liquor store looking for her. Roughly 1 sheriff's call a month to the one address is not a quirky neighborhood. That is a household in sustained crisis. The public record does not tell us the specifics of those calls. The volume tells us what we need to know about the weather inside that house, in my opinion. Then there's Damian Hernandez, 15 years old, who previously dated Celeste and went on the record with reporters. His words, not an interpretation. This is his words. Her parents were, quote, mean. Now, take it for what it's worth. He's 15. She, quote, didn't like them, unquote. She talked about running away to friends openly, even jokingly, for months before she actually did it. Nobody took her seriously, he said, until she ran 3 times, until the 3rd time she didn't come back. And again, this is important because, yes, kids do these things sometimes. Do they always have the most justifiable reasons for it? No, they don't. But sometimes they do. A lot of times they do. And we're far more interested as a society in making them the villain for being the bad person. Running away, bad, 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 bad child. You shouldn't be. Why are they running away? Because I'll tell you what, happy, healthy kids aren't running away. So what's behind that? What's making them unhappy? What's making them unhealthy? I can guarantee it's more than just you can't use your phone. I can guarantee there's something a little deeper and darker going on than just parental borders that are being put up, in my opinion. I mean, do you have the sporadic case every now and then, the outlier, whether it's just there's something wrong mentally going on and the kid runs? Yeah, sure. But it ain't the majority. I don't know what this one is, but it certainly deserves a hard look. Again, like I said, there's still kids in that household. There's still parents parenting, quote unquote. The same quality parenting that kept Celeste Rivas Hernandez from not running away three times and ending up dead in somebody's trunk. That type of parenting. A 13-year-old who is telling her friend she wants to disappear is not joking. She's taking a survey. She's asking whether anyone will stop her. Every adult in her life, including the adults she was asking, missed the question. Now consider what the people on the other side of the fence saw, or rather did not see. The family's next-door neighbor who told News Nation she had lived there since February of 2023. She said she had never once met the family in almost 3 years. She did not know their name. She did not know how many people lived in the house. Her own backyard bordered there. She could not hear, or she could hear Celeste sometimes through the walls. This is what isolation looks like when it's happening right next to you and you never learn to see it. A family in suburban California, a child yelling in the backyard, a woman on the other side of the fence who could not have told you the last name of anyone she was listening to. The piece nobody is pressing, the school. Celeste attended Lakeland Village School in Lake Elsinore through the seventh grade. She ran in April of 24. Investigators believe she died in the spring of 25. That is, at a minimum, one full school year, during which a 13-year-old California resident was enrolled, as far as the public record shows, nowhere. California law is clear on this. Education is mandatory through age 18. But go, if you want to see a great California's education system is, look up how many children were enrolled pre-COVID and look how many came back after. Look at the thousands that are missing. Missing, just gone, not accounted for anywhere. So it is rather understandable, not acceptable, but understandable how one could easily just slip through the cracks just because thousands of others have too, and nobody seems to care. School districts are required to track chronic absence. Districts are required to report missing students. Child Protective Services is supposed to be looped in on children who disappear from the education system. Child Protective Services also, in theory, is supposed to be staffed. It's supposed to have people that can actually carry out the duties of it in an effective manner. That doesn't exist. Lake Elsinore Unified School District, in a statement to the Los Angeles Times, confirmed a student who had attended their schools through seventh grade had died. They called it heartbreaking. They offered grief counseling for the kid who hadn't been there in like a year. Let's pretend we care. They did not publicly answer the question that ought to be asked out loud. Who was tracking the seventh grader after she did not come back the following August? This is a story of so many failures on so many parts of so many systems at the end of the day. It really is. Obviously, however she died, you got that. But how she got there is 90% of the story. If anybody was tracking her, what did they find? If nobody was, that is a different failure, and it belongs in this story. Other than just the dark feeling pop star connected to death, how did she get there? This does not stop at one family in one California town. Sean Johnson, the director of youth services at Operation Safe House in Riverside County, told a local outlet, KESQ, that post-pandemic chronic runaways are spiking in the region. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was not an outlier. She was a data point in a pattern nobody is paying attention to, unless the pattern ends in a Tesla trunk and a famous suspect attached to it. Yeah, she's just one we're talking about because it's connected to that guy. Thousands more are out there with stories just as horrible that there's no way in hell there is time to tell every single one of them. Now, the part of the story that actually twists itself again is this. The family's public face and the documented record are not telling the same story. Publicly, the grief is real, and it is devastating. The brother, Matthew Rivas, posted on Celeste's reactivated Instagram account that the family did everything they could. Did they? His words, flyers at her school, posts on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, calls to police, family searching everywhere, even extended family in Mexico sharing and praying, and that's all great. What about the lead up? What about the lead up? What was going on that made all of this possible? That is my question. I don't question your grief. I don't question your sadness. I don't question the pain and the hurt and the heartbreak. But you know what? There's a reason she ran away. There's a reason this took place. And the story is not the reaction. The story is what led to it. So before I jump on the bandwagon of sorrow and sadness here, let me take a closer look and point some fingers, because some fingers need to be pointed. And questions need to be asked. And until they're answered sufficiently with sufficient answers, I think there's a very real question about responsibility here in parenting and capabilities of doing so. And if these capabilities were not able to be met, why? And there ain't a lot of acceptable answers other than you're incapacitated and in the hospital and can't be there for your child. If you're breathing, if you're getting up out of bed every day, no excuses. Why? Because that's what it is to be an effing parent. There's just no excuses. I don't care. I don't care where you're from. I don't care where you're going. I don't care what language you speak. I don't care any of it. Don't care. You have a child. That is yours. That is your responsibility. Figure it out. I'm sure the home is sad. Brother says it's quiet and broken. Neighbors and family and friends have confirmed they saw the family walking the streets that summer with flyers asking if anyone had seen Celeste. Again, that grief is not performance. It is not manufactured for cameras. It is a family that has lost a child in the most horrific way imaginable. But the record sits uncomfortably next to that grief, and it deserves to be read out loud. Steve Fisher is a licensed private investigator hired by the landlord of the Hollywood Hills house David was renting. He has been aggressively and publicly pulling on threads. Nobody else has been really digging to the level that he has. On October 26 to 25, Fisher posted on his own account that the first time Celeste was reported missing, February 14th to 24, was the exact same day David's manager, Josh Marshall, took possession of the rental house where David was living. That is Fisher's allegation, not an independent confirmation fact. And he is on the record with it. Fisher has also said that according to a source close to the situation in Lake Elsinore, certain family members allegedly instructed concerned neighbors to stop searching for Celeste, telling them she was staying with a family member near Los Angeles. Quote, that's his claim. His theory, stated as theory, is that the family may have feared a formal Child Protective Services investigation if they told authorities what was actually going on. Don't want those Child Protective Services people coming in and taking a look at how you're raising your kids and your runaway that keeps running away and you still got others that are living here. Maybe there's a reason they're running away. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe. I don't know. That's Fisher's theory, anyway. It's not a proven fact, and it is being presented here as his allegation. It's certainly an open question. Again, I'm not saying that there's anything criminal or anything like that going on with the parenting of Celeste or her parents or her family. I'm saying we don't know the answer. I'm saying at the least, what we have here is parents that are derelict in their duty of being a parent. There's really no other way of putting it. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it to make somebody feel good. It is what it is. Then there's the piece that is harder to look away from, the verified GoFundMe that has been raising money for Celeste's family, the public face of the grief, the formal expression of a community rallying around them. It's organized by her cousin, Esmeralda Lozano. GoFundMe has publicly confirmed that the money is going directly to the family. Esmeralda Lozano is also the same cousin that Steve Fisher has openly, publicly by name, asked whether she attended an event with Celeste and David on April 21st of 2024. That's 16 days after Celeste was reported missing for the first time. Or for the last time, rather. The same cousin whose high school graduation Fisher claims Celeste attended on May 30th, 2024, photo allegedly in his possession. Fisher has asked her directly why Celeste was showing up at her graduation while officially classified as a runaway and apparently enrolled in no school. Was she missing? Because it appears she kind of wasn't. Kind of there, kind of on the ether, kind of 13. Going around and doing this. I mean, she's a kid. She's a kid. She's a kid. I mean, yeah, some kids grow up quicker than others. They're still a kid. You still got to be a parent there. I'm sure that Celeste grew up in the school of hard knocks. Probably led quite a life, probably had a bit more maturity for her age than others, I'm guessing, because she had to, because she had no choice, because that was the environment that she came up in. Parents are still alive. She's still 13. What are we missing here, parents? The parenting part. The parenting part. Again, let me be absolutely and completely clear here. Esmeralda Lozano has not been charged with anything. I'm not saying she's doing anything wrong, and I'm not saying this GoFundMe is wrong. Maybe this family does need some funding to figure things out and get themselves on their feet. I'm not trying to shit on that. But I am not going to sit here and keep covering this story and pretend that this is not a giant screaming red flag that is a part of this story. She's not been accused of anything. Organizing a GoFundMe for a family member who has died is not a sign of guilt. I'm not saying it at all. It's an act of love. She deserves, as every person in the story deserves, some grace. She's the one that's been coming out and telling some stories and talking. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to line up with the whole story of being missing, and it gives us more context. Into a window of a life that was clearly in chaos for Celeste. The collision in the record of this story is real and it is unavoidable. The public grief of this family and the open, unanswered questions about this family are coming out of the same household. That contradiction deserves to be named because the alternative is pretending it does not exist. And this case has already had enough of that. Two things can be true at the same time. A family can love a child and still not have been a safe place that she needed. Yeah. A family can grieve publicly and still have known more than the public posture suggests. Neither cancels out the other. Both belong in the story. And anyone else who's out there listening or watching going, oh, this sounds familiar. Okay. Time to reframe and readjust your life if this is hitting too close to home, especially if you're the parent. David has been arrested. A grand jury has heard testimony from his mother, his father, his brother, his daily manager, his friend. LAPD has said others may face charges. That story will play out in courtrooms over the next several years. With all the lawyers and motions and presumptions and procedural delays the justice system demands. But the other story, the Celeste story, the real one, the one no network is putting on or a podcast is covering, is not waiting in a courtroom. It is already in the public record. It is in the TMZ reports and the News Nation segments. It is in the 11 sheriff's visits. It's in the ex-boyfriend's on-camera interviews. It's in the Los Angeles Times quotes from neighbors and family friends. It's in Steve Fisher's documented social media posts. It's been sitting there this whole time. It's just that almost nobody wants to read it out loud because it means sitting with something uglier than a famous suspect in a horrific crime scene. It means sitting with the fact that before the Hollywood Hills ever heard Celeste Rivas Hernandez's name, her own neighbor had already logged her as a chronic runaway. Her school had already lost her. Her mother had already, by the mother's own words to TMZ, not seen her since April of 24. Her ex-boyfriend already heard her say out loud that she wanted out. Her cousin, according to one investigator's documented public allegations, had already been with her and David at events before she was even officially reported missing for the last time. The adults around Celeste did not fail her at the end. They failed her from the beginning. The Tesla was the last stop on a road that started a very long time before. Celeste Rivas Hernandez did not vanish from a safe home. She ran from a home she had already told her friends she wanted to leave. She slipped past 11 sheriff's visits, a school district, a social services net, a neighborhood of adults, and a family that was publicly searching, according to at least one investigator's allegations, not looking hard in private, apparently. She ended up in the trunk of a Tesla in the Hollywood Hills. But the truth is she had been falling through the floor in Lake Elsinore for a very long time before she ever got into the frunk. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. Sorry, this is what it is. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or cruel, but Jesus. You failed. This is a major failure. And bad parenting, part of the story, in my opinion, and it needs to be called out. Your thoughts in the comment section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
My fellow Americans, this July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moto Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prize. And one lucky winner is going to take home 1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.